Okay, thank you, Mrs. Brody. And is Rita here?
Carol
Wald, for your work in the beautiful Lunch and Learn series. Our Empty Nest Lunch and Learn series continues. And to Talia, who I think is not in the room, but for her touch as well to this beautiful program. We have more scheduled? We'll add more to the schedule. Okay, fantastic. But it's great to be together. It's great to have the opportunity to learn. And thank you for coming. I thought we would talk about today's Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Chodesh Adar, two Adars. So I thought we'd talk about Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Chodesh is one of those funny holidays where on the one hand, it's a holiday. It has an identity as a holiday, components of a holiday. We said Hallel this morning. There's a Korban Musaf, so we said Musaf today. On the one hand, Rosh Chodesh has aspects, qualities of a holiday. On the other hand, it's what you call a minor holiday. We did say Hallel, but we didn't say the whole thing. And we did have a Musaf reflecting the Korban Musaf, the sacrifice of the Musaf. But you did drive here. You're on your telephone. We're no Isser Malacha. It's not like a Shabbos or Yontif in which we are not allowed to do creative labor. So Rosh Chodesh is a sort of quasi-holiday. Unclear exactly where it fits in and in what way we commemorate or celebrate. So that's what I want to talk to you about today. But I want to introduce or begin the conversation. I was just looking up this morning because I was curious myself. On Shabbos, we recited Mevarcha Machodesh. That notion that appears in almost all Siddurim, the notion that we bless the new month, we announce the new month and bless the new month, it precedes the 13th century, it goes back many centuries ago, that we already in the community announce when Rosh Chodesh is going to take place, and different Nuschos, different Siddurim, have different lengths of what is said, Chassidim in particular, I know that our Shtibamin, our Chabadmin, the Sfardim, it's one sentence, it's very quick. Ashkenazim with a little chazanus, a little bit more drawn out. Make sure you have the right chazan for Birchas HaChodesh. Sometimes you have a different chazan for Birchas HaChodesh, even then for Musaf. It's very moving, it's stirring, use the right tune. We invoke all these hopes and ambitions and dreams for that month ahead, what we're wishing, what we're longing, what we're looking forward to. A month of this, a month of that, a month not of this, a month not of that. And there's a lot to talk about even within that Yehi Ratzon, Mevarcha Machodesh. Why do we recite, for example, should be a month that has no busha uchlima. Why do we say that twice? A month of, we say that once. I'm sorry, Yerushamayim we say twice. Should be a month we have Yerushamayim. Why do we say it twice? Because in between, we ask for Osher v'chavod. So once you ask for Osher v'chavod, you got to come back and ask for Yerushamayim again. Once you ask for wealth and honor can be very antithetical. Wealth and honor can be very contradictory to the theme of Yerushamayim, of awe. And therefore we go back, we have to ask it again. And there are other Divrei Torah on it. But I want to focus in and zoom in on an insertion that we've been adding during Birchas HaChodesh. And we will continue to do so for another month until Nisan. Although that too is a dispute of a minog. What words are those that we're adding in? Kaparas Pasha. Kaparas Pasha. There are 12 expressions of dreams and hopes that we have for the month ahead. There's a 13th expression, Kaparas Pasha, atonement. And forgiveness, and we add that in specifically in a leap year, and this is a leap year. Today or tomorrow is the first day of the first Adar, but there are two Adars, which in itself could be its own shiur or conversation. Will the real Adar please stand up? Which is the more authentic Adar? In other words, in a leap year we add an Adar. Why do we add an Adar in a leap year? Because the Jewish people operate based on a lunar calendar. Secular world is on a solar calendar. In order to commemorate and observe the different holidays that we experienced during different periods of the year, to get them back where they're meant to be, since the lunar calendar is shorter than the solar calendar and the seasons, we have to stick in an extra month in order to realign things the way they're meant to be. Because otherwise you'll be celebrating Pesach in the middle of the winter. And Pesach is a holiday Chodesh HaAviv. It is a yontif that not only did it historically happen during the spring, this is a misnomer, a misconception that people have. It's not simply that we want to commemorate the holidays and the season that they happened to be authentic and genuine. You know, it's like, what are those called? The fair where the people dress up and the Renaissance fair. You know, you want to dress up and look like and act out and totally commemorate the exact way that it happened. Well, if we left Egypt in the spring, we should commemorate it and celebrate it in the spring in order to be the most authentic. That's not the reason. That's not the reason. So what is the reason for a leap year? Because there's something about the spring that enabled, that gave birth, that empowered Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Exodus. And there's something about the spring, the energy, that too commemorates, or we're able to tap into that same energy in order to liberate and emancipate ourselves every year. It goes back to a very basic understanding of the Jewish calendar and Jewish holidays, which often is misunderstood, which is that there's no such thing as commemorating. We do not commemorate or memorialize or recreate. That's not what we're doing. In the secular calendar, that's what you do. So the secular calendar, we mark President's Day, or we mark Memorial Day, we mark Independence Day. Why do we mark Independence Day? Nothing to do with our independence today, but we commemorate years ago, War of Independence, and we became free, and we became autonomous, and therefore Independence Day of years ago. In Judaism, the Jewish calendar is not about commemorating events of the previous. It's about, there are dates on our calendar. The Jewish calendar is not linear. A linear calendar starts here and moves along a timeline, progresses wherever we are right now in this moment. On Tuesday, the 30th of Shvat, we are that point of time, and we move and progress along the timeline. So in front of us is the future, and behind us is the past, and we are a dot moving along the timeline. That's a very linear understanding of time. We don't have a linear understanding of time. We have a cyclical understanding of time. It's not a circle. If it were a circle, you would meet yourself from last year, and that was the middle of Corona, so you wouldn't meet yourself here. So, and no one necessarily wants to meet themselves from last year or 2 years ago. It's not a circle. It's more a spiral. A spiral follows the same circular pattern, but progresses. So the Jewish view of time is a spiral, which means that we revisit the same themes and ideas and energies of the same points on that circle, but we move forward. So we are revisiting, the circle repeats itself, but as a spiral, it does so with a sense of progression. So each holiday, we don't observe the holiday because we're commemorating history. We observe the holiday because the historical event that happened on that day revealed an energy and a potential that was in that day, that it was in that time, that we didn't know existed until the event that happened then. And therefore, because the historical event that happened then revealed to us what was significant in that point of time, now we can tap into it and re-experience it today. Let me explain a little bit more clearly. I don't know if anybody followed what I just said. What I mean to say is the following. Rashi tells us that Avram Avinu, when the three angels visit, what holiday was it? It was Pesach. It didn't serve chametz. Pesach? What does Pesach commemorate? Leaving Egypt. Had the Jews yet gone to Egypt? How did Avram observe a holiday that commemorated an event that didn't yet happen? It's a very simple question. Did it ever bother you? It's a very simple question. Everybody knows the angels visited. It was the holiday of Pesach. Avram observed the holiday of Pesach. How do you observe something commemorating an event that had not yet occurred? What does that mean? How does that make any sense? The answer is, Avram didn't observe the historical component of the holiday of Pesach. Avram observed the theme of Pesach. Liberty, emancipation, freedom. Not freedom from, but freedom to. All the deep ideas of exchanging, not being an eved to people, but being a servant and submitting and surrendering to Hashem. All the deep ideas and messages, all the themes that we invoke over that holiday. Extract the historic component, but Avram knew that that was present in that point of time. How did he know that? Because he was Avram. So Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Sarev, Karach, and Leah, they were so much finer in tuned to the themes of the day that they were able to understand and experience and enjoy and benefit without needing the historical event. We need the historical event. So the historical event tells us what energy is potential in that time. We can tap into it, grow from it, be transformed by it. But we're not commemorating a part of history. We are experiencing something in the present. So if Pesach for you is only about cleaning, cooking, shopping, overpaying, if Pesach for you is only about the work that goes in, and the sit at the Seder, and you read the Haggadah, and you commemorate part of, and you're talking about something thousands of years ago, then you've not celebrated Pesach. Because every holiday is not about the past, it's about how the past informs and inspires the present. I think this is true as well. Every time I talk about this, I go on this editorial detour, which you'll excuse me for. But I think it's certainly also true about our birthdays and anniversaries. And that's why I try to insist, although I'm the only one in my family, preserving a Hebrew birthday and a Hebrew anniversary. A secular Gregorian birthday and anniversary are nice as far as Social Security and the IRS are concerned. But as Jews, they're irrelevant and insignificant to us. Why? Because a secular date on the calendar says, you know what? I'm going to commemorate on my, this is a big anniversary for us in May. What day in May? 20th or 16th? Somewhere around there. No, but what's my anniversary? Sometime in May. That's how I'm trying to show you how much I insist. Oh, thank you. I'm trying to tell you how much I insist on not commemorating the Gregorian date. So that, so this this May, please God, B'li Ayinara will be our 25th anniversary. Mirtz Hashem, please God. So it, the secular view of an anniversary is you're commemorating that 25 years ago, we stood under a chuppah. It was a good shmorg. It was at Marina. It's a cold day at the chuppah outside anyway. But 25 years ago, there was an event and we're celebrating today. 25 years ago, something happened. That's not the Jewish view. You know what the Jewish view is? Chaf Iyar. Chaf Iyar is my Hebrew anniversary. Chaf Iyar, you know what happened on Chaf Iyar? Two souls that were a half became a whole. And every year on Chaf Iyar, when we revisit and commemorate, we're not celebrating 25 years ago something happened. We're saying, we're standing under the chuppah right now. The two souls that are a half are becoming a whole once again. We're integrating and blending. We're becoming one. Our life is entirely integrated together today. We're not commemorating a past, we're re-experiencing. Every year on your birthday, if it's your English birthday, your Gregorian birthday, so you're commemorating X number of years ago, miraculously you were born. But if you're celebrating your Hebrew birthday, what you're saying is that the world was incomplete without you. And every year on that day, you realize that if Hashem has renewed your contract for another year, it means you still have things to do. It means you still have a difference to make. It means you're born anew, you're born again, and you revisit, why am I here and what am I meant to do? So this notion of the Jewish notion of time is entirely different. It's entirely different, and it's not taught, and people don't understand it. So we think, you know, the secular notion of time ends up leading to failing to commemorate. So on July 4th, nobody says, what does independence mean to me? What does it mean to be free and independent? They say barbecue, baseball game, fireworks. And all secular holidays are usually shopping, food, shopping, fireworks. Because when you're commemorating, the further away you get from what you're commemorating, the less meaningful, significant, or relevant it is. But if you realize I'm not commemorating, I'm experiencing, I'm living, I'm learning, transforming, so it's more relevant than ever every year because it's that year and it's what you're meant to, it's what you're meant to get and what you're meant to take away from it. So why is there a leap year? Because Pesach has to be in the spring. Why does Pesach have to be in the spring? Not because Pesach happened in the spring, so it's like a Renaissance fair. We're going to have to dress the part, look the part, do it in the right time of the year. If we want to be most authentic and real, then we should move it back to the spring. That's not why. It's that Chodesh Aviv, the spring, gave forth Pesach. We sprung in the spring, we sprung free. We were emancipated and liberated. The spring, the season of the spring, the theme of the spring, the time of year of the spring was a critical component and driver. It was part of the engine of what created and enabled Pesach. So because we're on a lunar calendar, not a solar, and because that year is shorter, and because everything would consistently, each year that we would lose a little time, would be moving earlier and earlier, next thing you know, you'd be observing Yom Ne'orayim in the spring and Pesach in the winter, and everything would be off. And what's the problem with that? You know, Yom Tovim never come on time. They're either late or they're early. They have yet to ever come on time. So what's the problem with their not being on time? Is not an inaccuracy of observing or commemorating. It's an inability to extract from that holiday what we're meant to extract and how we're meant to change. So that's why we have leap years. How do we create a leap year? We throw in a second month of Adar. Second month of Adar. The Gemara learns from Sukkim. How do we know that? How do we know it's Adar? How do we know it's a month? We learn, we push it in. That second Adar pushes off Nisan, pushes Pesach right back where it's meant to be, which is the later, in a leap year, you're pushing everything as far back as it can, then it creeps forward, then you push it back, and then it creeps forward. So when you push it back, you're moving it. That's why Pesach will be as late as it gets this year, and then Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur will be as late as it gets this year, because it's a leap year and we're pushing in a second Adar. So you have a leap year, it's a second Adar. The question is, which is the second Adar? Which is the real Adar, the annual Adar, and which is the second Adar, which is the additional Adar, which is the one that I'm putting in? Well, what difference does it make? I have two Adars, so just keep two Adars. What do I care? You do care if you're observing a Yahrzeit. You do care if it's your bar mitzvah. You do care if you want to know when to keep Purim, which is the real Adar and which is the extra Adar. So that's a big discussion we're not going to have right now. We observe Purim in the second Adar. Why? excuse me. Thank you. Several reasons are given, but the Gemara concludes because we're somech geula legeula. Since Nisan has Pesach, which commemorates freedom, redemption, and Purim, we were redeemed. So we do redemptions together. We do holidays of redemption near each other. So we observe Purim in the second Adar. What about Yeretzites? Sfarim do the second Adar. Ashkenazim do the first Adar. And then the Ramah says, really do both. Do both. Light a candle both. Say Kaddish both. If you can, fast. If you fast on a Yeretzite in both. Ashkenazim do both. When is a bar mitzvah? Again, interesting discussions, which is the real Adar and which is the one that we're putting in. So when we have a leap year, when do we announce that leap year? When does it get announced? Cheshvan, Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan. And the end of the leap year certainly is by the end of the second Adar. Now you're going to welcome Nisan. The leap year is concluded. So during those months, Cheshvan to Nisan, in the Birchas HaChodesh that we recite on the Shabbos preceding Rosh Chodesh, when we list our ambitions, our dreams, our hopes for that month, we have an extra clause, an extra phrase, Kaparas Pasha. The Hasidei Ashkenaz of the 13th century helped put in that extra phrase. Why? Why? Where do we see a Kaparas Pasha? It appears in the Siddur of the Shla, the Siddur of Shem Shofal Hirsch, the Siddur of the Gra. It does not appear in the Siddur of the Baal Tanya. Baal Tanya has organized the tefillos according to the Arizal. He does not have Kaparas Pasha. All the Siddurim that are organized according to the Arizal do have Kaparas Pasha. Why? I was curious. Why? I only remember this every few years. When you have a leap year, then you are stimulated to go look up and remember, why do we have this extra phrase? So the reason that's brought down, the Eliyahu Rabbah quotes, because how many expressions are there in Birchas HaChodesh? 12. 12 correspond with 12 months of the year. When there's a 13th month of the year, you need a 13th expression. So you put in Kaparas Pasha. Now it's unclear exactly that it happened that way. It seems that there always were 13 expressions. It was the Hasidei Ashkenaz of the 13th century who decided to correlate our prayers to the months of the year. So now, there always were 13, and you said that every month, and no one ever counted. It didn't really make a difference. These were the themes that we were trying to invoke, so we said it every year. Until the 13th century, when we said, you know, there's 13 expressions. Why don't we do 12 of them all the time, and the 13th we'll save for when it's a leap year, and they reorganize things in order to save that 13th expression for a year that there would be 13 months, namely a leap year. Namely a leap year. So Kaparas Pasha, there's different minhagim of when you add it, some as early as Nisan of the previous year, some as early as Tishrei of that year, some Cheshvan when it will be announced, exactly when you start announcing it. By the way, in Avelus, if somebody, God forbid, loses a mother or father, so they're obligated to mourn for them for how long? So most people say a year, which is incorrect. Avelus of parents is not, it's not 11 months. You say Kaddish 11 months. The reason Kaddish is said for 11 months is the maximum time a person could need spiritual rehab before they go upstairs is 12 months. So as not to suggest that our loved one needed the maximum time, Kaddish is only said 11 months, not 12. That's Kaddish. How long is Avelus? Not a year. 12 months. It's 12 months, which is why in a leap year such as this, somebody who lost a mother or father, normally Avelus is 30 days. 12 months is an expression of kibbut ave'im. It's reserved for parents as an expression of honoring parents. But it's not, you don't mourn for a year, you mourn for 12 months. So in a very strange phenomenon this year, someone will finish Kaddish at the end of 11 months, have one more month of mourning at the end of 12 months, and then have a full month until their first Yuritzite. But in that 13th month, because it's a leap year, they're not in a state of mourning. Not in a state of mourning. Because Avelus is 12 months, not a full year. Another thing that comes out from this is an interesting Chassam Sofer. These are miscellaneous string of thoughts having to do with leap years. That is the theme of our Lunch and Learn. Apparently, that has emerged to be the theme of our Lunch and Learn. So, Chassam Sofer has an interesting Chiddush. You know that before Purim, we'll have this shortly, you have to hear Parshas. We read Parshas Zachor. Maybe the only biblical obligation of Torah to read Parshas Zachor. We invoke the story of Amalek. We remind ourselves, Zachor, remember, Al Tishkach, never forget. There are those who threaten, those who seek to annihilate us. And we are obligated to remember them. So the problem is, what happens? This year, when you get to Parshas Zachor, how long will it have been since you heard Parshas Zachor? It'll be 13 months. So if you have an annual obligation to hear the Zohar reading, so what do? You're not fulfilling it because, you know, according to the Luach, you did it each year. But if you count the months, it's been 13 months since you heard Parsha Zohar. Chassam Sofer says, pay attention, Parsha's Kisetze last summer. If you listen to Parsha's Kisetze, where Zohar comes from, and you have in mind, this is also Zohar, so now you got it in within the 13th month, you won't have too long of a break between them, and you're on your way. So as I said, these are some miscellaneous halachas about a leap year. So Eliyahu Rabbah says, where did it come from? Again, there's different opinions about the origin, but there are 13 expressions in Tfilos in Birchas HaChodesh, so 12 for the 12 months of the year, and we reserve one Kaparas Pasha for a leap year. For a leap year. This doesn't appear in the Siddur of the Avudraham or elsewhere. There's a beautiful article in Yeshiva University's Torah Journal by Rabbi Menachem Taubes. Rabbi Taubes should have Refuah Shleimah, should be well. So he has a very interesting article about the origins of Kaparas Pasha. And as always, he does a very thorough research and analysis about why we do this. So why? Why do we reserve that expression? Okay, so it's cute. 12 expressions for 12 months, a 13th expression for the 13th month. But why would the theme of the 13th expression, why is the theme of the leap year, the additional month, Kapara, Kaparas Pasha? Kaparas Pasha means God forgive me for my iniquity, for my sin, for my mistakes. What does that have to do with the 13th month? What connection or correlation would there be between the extra Adar and needing forgiveness? Any thoughts? Ideas? What? Okay, good. So the Shver says, more time to do Averus. You have a 13th month. Normally you only did 12 months worth of Averus. Here you have a 13th month to do Averus. He doesn't do any Averus, but a 13th month others do to do Averus. So Kaparas Pasha, because you need to be forgiven for the extra Averus you did that year. Normally you have 12 months of Averus, you get a whole extra month of Averus. So you need part. Okay, interesting. Ethan.
It should not have been a leap year, so you're now being comments on what would have been
Pesach. Oh, very good. So that's an opinion of the Tsefer Tameam in Hagim, and also the author of the Baruch She'amar, which is Baruch HaLevi Epstein, the Torah Tamima, and the Sefer Baruch She'amar. They both suggest that what if you got it wrong? We know that Beis Din is empowered to be able to introduce a leap year. There's certain criteria to determine when the leap year should be. What if you messed up? What if you got it wrong? What if you're wrong in the calculation? So therefore, maybe Kaparas Pasha is Ulay Hashana Be'emes Einet Tzrich Lios Mu'beres. Maybe the criteria are not met. The year should not be a leap year. You artificially inserted a second Adar when it didn't belong. And then what's going to happen? The second Adar is really what month? Nisan. So on Purim, which should be Pesach, what are you going to be doing? Eating? You're eating chametz on Pesach. Kaparas Pasha, what if we got it wrong? Forgive us that we might be eating chametz on Pesach. That is the insight of the Tamim and Hagim and of the Baruch She'amar. When you say it, you're getting ready for the fact that this coming year is a leap year. If we're wrong, we're sorry. We're sorry in advance, we're sorry during, maybe not sorry after. The Maram Shik, or Chaim Simon Kuf Pei Dalet, has a different answer. And he says that the year is misaligned. When you introduce the Ibr Shana, when you introduce the extra month, you are realigning the year to get the solar, the lunar calendar back in sync, the holidays back in sync with their seasons. So therefore, the Chodesh Ibor is Osa Shalom Ben Achama Levana. We know the moon and the sun, each wanted to rule and reign. Hashem said you can't have two people wearing one crown. The moon was shrunken and given the stars as a consolation prize. And when do they make up? When you add the extra month, and now the lunar and solar calendar are aligned again, there is a sync which takes place, a S-Y-N-C, a syncing that takes place, and therefore, shalom, there's peace which is created, and whenever you have peace, you have kapara, you have forgiveness. Peace is the greatest bracha that we have, greatest bracha that we could have, and so when we achieve peace, when we realign, when we calibrate, and we have a sense of harmony between us, then we achieve kapara, we have peace, among us, and that's why in that extra month or the year that has the extra month, we save and we reserve Kaparas Pasha for that reason. That's the Maram Shik. And he quotes several other reasons as well. He says himself, Rabbi Talbis, he makes a suggestion. He says that we know, the Gemara tells us, B'nisan nigalu, u'b'nisan asidan lehigael. We were redeemed in the month of Nisan, the story of Pesach, the Exodus, and the future redemption, when we will be made whole and be redeemed yet again, will take place also when? In the month of Nisan. When we add the second Adar, what are we doing? We're delaying redemption. For delaying redemption, Kaparas Pasha. Aye, we're doing the right thing. Okay, but even doing the right thing, we have regret that to do the right thing, we are delaying the redemption. So Kaparas Pasha, for the fact that we are delaying the ultimate redemption by having to introduce the extra month. So these are several reasons why maybe the expression, the phrase, the clause, Kaparas Pasha, what does forgiveness or atonement have to do with the fact that it's a leap year? Maybe we made a mistake and it shouldn't be, and we'll come to Chametz on Pesach. Maybe we're achieving harmony between the sun and the moon, the soul of the lunar calendar, and that is a time that's predisposed for, it's auspicious for kapara, for forgiveness, maybe because we're delaying redemption. But I would like to suggest to you, and this is where I want to pivot to now talking about Rosh Chodesh and the holiday, that it's much more fundamental to what Rosh Chodesh is really all about. Rosh Chodesh has themes of kapara altogether, not only in a leap year. It's a Rosh Chodesh theme. How do you know that? There's something that happens in some communities, Erev Yom Kippur Katan. I grew up with a friend, Zev Karasik, who when he comes to Florida, or his father, his parents I think are down here during the winter, the Karasiks, they often text me, do you know of a Yom Kippur Katan minyan? Yom Kippur Katan minyan. What's a Yom Kippur Katan? We have a tradition that Erev Rosh Chodesh, every Erev Rosh Chodesh is Yom Kippur Katan. Every Erev Rosh Chodesh is Yom Kippur Katan. We have one Yom Kippur, the big Yom Kippur every year, but if you wait once a year in order to be able to achieve atonement, forgiveness, repair, reset, so then a lot can happen in between. Since we can't afford to wait for what's going to happen, so we don't only do the dry cleaning on our souls once a year, we do it once a month, so that it never becomes too filthy. So we instituted this notion of a Yom Kippur Katan. There is a tradition of Yom Kippur Katan. We do not yet have we have a Motzei Shabbos Rabbeinu Tam Marav Minyan, but we do not yet have a Yom Kippur Katan minyan. Then we'll know we really arrived, and it'll be soon enough that there'll be a request for that. But Yom Kippur Katan, Yulein, Haftar, it's all Yom Kippur Katan liturgy that is said, Erev Rosh Chodesh Yom Kippur Katan. Where did that come from? It comes from this idea that there's a notion of kapara for Rosh Chodesh. The Sefer Taman and Hagim goes further. He says, why do we only say a half halal in Rosh Chodesh? Why don't we say the full halal? So we know the classic reason, Rosh Chodesh, again, we'll get to in a moment, is a quasi-holiday, not a full holiday. So the halal on Rosh Chodesh altogether is a minug. Sfarim don't make a bracha on halal on Rosh Chodesh. Sfarim don't say a bracha, because they conclude, it's a big machlokas, Rambam tells us, do you make a bracha on a minug? They say, you don't make a bracha on a minug. Rosh Chodesh halal is just a minug, they don't make the bracha. We do make the bracha, but to differentiate it, we only say a half halal, not a full halal. That's the classic reason. Sefer Tamim and Hagim gives a different reason. He says, Omer Mahala Badilak Barash Chodesh Peshub Davi Yom Slicha VeKapara. Kamar Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, Shein Omer Mahala Shalem. Just like on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, you don't say halal. It's not a day that's appropriate to say halal. Since every Rosh Chodesh is a miniature Rosh Hashanah, Erev Rosh Chodesh is a miniature Yom Kippur, Yom Kippur Katan. Rosh Chodesh is a Rosh Hashanah Katan. So therefore, it's inappropriate to say a full holiday halal. You only say a half halal. So we have a precedent. We have this notion that there are themes of kapara. The idea of atonement, of forgiveness, is part and parcel, is very much deeply connected to the notion of Rosh Chodesh altogether. And the question is, why? Why? What about Rosh Chodesh has to do with kapara? Is Chanukah kapara? Purim kapara? Is Shavuos kapara? Pesach kapara? Why Rosh Chodesh? What about Rosh Chodesh is kapara? So first of all, Rosh Chodesh is given in Sefer Shmos, we know when we came out of Mitzrayim, HaChodesh Zelachem Rosh Chodesh, the very first mitzvah that we're given in the Torah. Why is this the very first mitzvah we're given in the Torah? Sforno famously says that what differentiates, what distinguished us as free from slaves is our ability to control time. If you want to know whether you're really free or not, look at your calendar. I don't mean how much free time you have in your calendar, I mean how much are you in control of your calendar and how much does your calendar control you? When we are controlled by our calendar, when we are slaves to our calendar, then we don't really have freedom. Freedom is the ability to consciously, strategically, mindfully decide how we spend our time. And that's why the very first mitzvah that slaves were given was HaChodesh HaZelachem. HaChodesh HaZelachem. It's not a coincidence that what's the very next mitzvah is a Korban Pesach with a Chabura, with your family, locked in the house. You can't leave until you all get along. Because what we're told is, to be free is to be in control of your own time. And how should you be using your own time? Go home, be with your family. Break bread, have a big meal. Not bread, dafka. Break matzah with your family. So Achodesh is Lachan, the very first mitzvah. We know in Sefer Bamidbar, Perek Yud, the Torah tells us, V'yom simchaschem v'moadeichem, u'v'rosh echad sheichem, u'skatim b'chatzotos, alaluseichem, v'zivcheichem, and so on. So included in our moadeichem, included among our holidays, are rosh echad sheichem, rosh chodesh are among our holidays. We have in Divrei Hayamim, the Navi tells us in Divrei Hayamim, the pasuk says, "Hinani bone bayis tashem Hashem alakai lakdish laktir b'fun of Torah." Some arechus tamid, Shlomo HaMelech says, "I'm going to build a house for Hashem in order to bring certain offerings." Va'olah zaboka le'erev la'shabbosos v'la'chadashim u'le'moadei Hashem. So we have here listed: there's Shabbos, there's Moed. Moed means, what's the literal translation of the word Moed? We actually have that word in our parsha, v'no'adati. In the parsha of the Mishkan, Hashem says, you know what the purpose of the Mishkan is? V'no'adati lachem shama. We're going to have a rendezvous there. No'adati, moed, means an appointed time. Moed means an appointed time. It's a rendezvous point. So moedim are appointed times. This fits with what I was telling you before about the Jewish notion of time. We're not commemorating history. They are appointed times on the calendar with an energy to them that we are meant to tap into. So we have Shabbosos, Chadashim, and Moadei Hashem. So where's Rosh Chodesh? Is Rosh Chodesh Chol? Is Rosh Chodesh a secular day, a mundane day, a profane day? A Vachadika day? Is Rosh Chodesh not Shabbos? It's not a Moed. What is Rosh Chodesh? What is Rosh Chodesh? We have the story in Malachim, where Vayomer Madua Atolachas Elav Hayom Lo Chodesh Velo Shabbos Vatomer Shalom. We have a story. Why are you going today? It's not Shabbos, not Rosh Chodesh. Where would we be going? The Gemara in Sukkah, Daf Chav Zayin, learns from here. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Minayin Shechayev Adam Lahak B'Panei Rabba B'Regel. Then on a Yontif, you're supposed to go visit your Rebbe. Once upon a time, people would leave their family before Yontif or take the whole family for Yontif. It was a time that you congregated, gathered together with your Rebbe. As an aside, the Nodav Yehuda is a tshuva railing against this. Chassidim tried to reinstitute the notion and the practice of Lahak B'Panei Rabba B'Regel. That you would go. You see it a little bit during our time. Those who go to Uman for Rosh Hashanah, they leave, I would argue, abandon their family in cases they leave Eretz Yisrael. Some poskim have said they abandon the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael to go to Uman to be with Rav Nachman for Rosh Hashanah. I know some have incredibly spiritual times. I know there are great people who do it. I'm not weighing in. I don't have a comment on it. But the Nodav Yehuda saw what the Hasidim were doing and he railed against it. Why? He said, we no longer are able to go Aliyah L'Regel to see our great master Hashem. We don't have a Beis HaMikdash and a mitzvah Aliyah L'Regel, but we're going to continue to go visit, and as a counterfeit, as if, so to say, Chalila, to replace, supplant Hashem, go visit Pnei Rabba B'Regel. He railed against it, the Nodav Yehuda. But the Gemara here says, how do you know you have to go visit your Rebbe on the Regel? Shenemar madu ato lachasit lav hayom lachodesh v'lo Shabbos. Eliyahu the prophet said, why are you going to Eliyahu today? It's not Rosh Chodesh, it's not Shabbos. Michlal, divichodesh, v'shabbos, mechai v'inish, like bulei p'nei, ape rabbe. On Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh, you have to go visit your Rebbe. So you see, Rosh Chodesh again has a component, a holiday theme to it. A holiday theme to it. You see this in several other Gemaras as well. What about Malacha? Are you allowed to do Malacha on Rosh Chodesh? Today's Rosh Chodesh. You drove here. Some of you are writing right now. Some of you are on your phones right now. Are you allowed to do malacha on Rosh Chodesh? So the Gemara in Shabbos Daf Chavdal tells us that Ma'u lahazkir Rosh Chodesh b'birchas hamazon. The Gemara there wonders, should you mention Rosh Chodesh in benching? Does Rosh Chodesh get an honorary mention in benching? Im timtzalomar b'chanaka d'rabbanan lo tzarech Rosh Chodesh d'oreis tzarech. Maybe on the one hand you'll say, well, Chanukah doesn't get because d'rabbanan it doesn't need Alanisim. During Chanukah, because it's a rabbinic festival, you don't have to mention Alanisim in benching. But Rosh Chodesh, which is Doraisa, Rosh Chodesh is a biblical holiday, maybe it should get Yalav Yavo. Odilma came to Lasar Basias Malacha, La Maskarinan. Or maybe Rosh Chodesh, there's no prohibition of creative labor. The 39 categories of creative labor that you're not allowed to do on Shabbos and Yontif that don't apply on Rosh Chodesh. So maybe it doesn't rise to the level of maybe you should mention. So you see, the Gemara there takes for granted that there is no prohibition of Malach of creative labor on Rosh Chodesh. But the Gemara in Chagiga Daf Yud Ches says, also Rosh Chodesh Yochiyah Yesh Bo Korban Musaf U'Mutar Basiyas Malacha. Rosh Chodesh is an unusual hybrid. There's a Korban Musaf which reflects a holiday, but you're allowed to do creative labor. So again, which is it? So Tosfos has a tradition. Tosfos says, "Vaday mutar basiyas malacha le'anashim, aval nashim asurus b'malacha." Women have the practice not to do malacha on Rosh Chodesh. So Sylvia, Carol, and Talia, who put this together, should have been three men who put together the lunch and learn today, not three women. But Tosfos quotes a tradition, a minag, that men are permitted to do malacha on Rosh Chodesh, but women should not do malacha. What does that mean, women shouldn't do malacha?
No cooking.
No laundry, no cooking. Perk up. Ears should perk up now. What does it mean women don't do malacha on Rosh Chodesh? So it doesn't mean the 39 categories of creative labor. It means malacha in the much more traditional definition of the word, labor. Not creative labor, like turning on a light switch. Not creative labor, but actual labor. Actual laborious activity. Why do women get the day off, but men have to work? You see, the Torah has a tremendous gender bias towards women. I always say, if you look at study, you would know that there is a gender bias in Chazal, among the Gemara and in the Torah. It's just a gender bias towards women and against men. And here's another example of it. A rabbinic tradition that we give women a day off every month, while the men have to continue to work. Why? Such discriminatory bias against the men and in favor of the women. Why? Why don't they do malacha? Tosfos quotes this, Rashi quotes it there as well. So Tosfos himself gives the reason. Tosfos says, Shelo pirku nizmeim b'maisa egel. 2 weeks parsha from now. Because when the people panicked because Moshe didn't come down, and all of a sudden they said, we lost our tangible connection to Hashem. We used to have a leader that we could see, hear, touch. We felt Hashem manifest through a physical connection. He's gone. And they panicked. They miscalculated when day one was, the night or the day, and therefore they miscalculated and they panicked. And they said, we need to build something. We need a physical manifestation. This is the Kuzari's understanding of Maisa Ego. So everybody ran to donate. But that's not true. Not everybody ran to donate. The men ran to donate their gold and silver. The women said, I don't think this is a good idea. Where's your patience? Relax. Something doesn't add up. Something doesn't seem right. Relax. The men are panicky and fidgety and running and doing, and because they act impetuously, they end up with the tremendous chet ha'egel. And the women say, slow down. Relax. Let's think about this. Let's look at this. Does this make sense? Is this right? I'm not giving anything. I'm not running to give anything. Now we have an inverse of that happens in our parsha. And that is, when it came to the building of the Mishkan, the men said, let's slow down. I don't know if we should donate. I don't know how big the donation should be. I don't know if we have to give. How much did the other person give? And the women said, what are you talking about? Let's run to give. They ripped their own jewelry off and they gave. So we have this inverse historical experience or relationship that when it came to the Mishkan, the men hesitated to give when the women ran to give. And when it came to the Chet HaEgel, the men ran to give and the women pressed pause and hesitated to give. And the Tur quotes in Or HaChaim Siman Tov Yud Zayin, the Tur, Rav Yaakov ben Asher, those who heard, tonight we have rabbis on the run. We're talking about the Friedrich Rebbe running from the Nazis. The last time I taught it was the Rush. The Rush ran from France, Germany to Spain. So we talked there about the Rush and his son Rav Yaakov ben Asher, who authored, organized the Tur. So the Tur writes, we have a tradition from the Yerushalmi that women don't do labor, they don't do work on Rosh Chodesh. Why? So women were given as a reward for the fact that they did not run to give their jewelry. What was the acknowledgement? What is the reward? Rosh Chodesh. They didn't give to the Egel, they ran to give to the Mishkan, Rosh Chodesh. It's not one reward. It seems very unfair. How many is it? 12 in this year. 13 rewards. The Tur quotes further in the name of his brother. Shamatim Yochi Arav Yehuda. Tam Ladaber Lefisha Modim Niskanu Negra Avos. He says even further, he has a tradition from his brother, that the festive holidays, the Moedim, the Regalim, are organized according to commemorate our Avos. Pesach Keneged Avram. Pesach corresponds with Avram. Lushi Basiu Gos, Pesach Chaya. Shavuos is Keneged Yitzchak. Why? Ki a shofar shall matan Torah, but shofar in Me'ayal shall Yitzchak. The shofar that was blown at Har Sinai, the giving of the Torah, was the ram's horn from the Akedah Yitzchak. So Avram Pesach, Yitzchak Shavuos, Sukkos is Keneged, should be easy, process of elimination. Sukkos Keneged, Yaakov. Where do we see that? Ulumikneu asa Sukkos. Yaakov makes for his cattle Sukkos. Could have quoted a different pasuk, which is, after Yaakov and Esav reconcile, it says Yaakov goes immediately where? To Sukkos. Why is that? It's a beautiful Torah, not for now. So Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov correspond with Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos. The Yud Beis Rosh Chodeshim, Shagam Heim Nekroim Moadim Keneged Yud Beis Shvatim. And the 12 months correspond with the 12 tribes. Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Pesach, Shavuos, Sukkos. 12 tribes, 12 Rosh Chodeshes. But what happened? Keshechatu Be'egel, Nitlu Mehem V'Nitlu L'Neshoseyim. L'Zechesh Lo Hayu Be'osel Chet. When the men failed with the Chet Egel, Hashem said, give that back to me. I'm taking back Rosh Chodesh, I'm giving it to your wives. The women got Rosh Chodesh, the men lost it. Rosh Chodesh became a woman's holiday, exclusively a woman's holiday in the sense at least of abstaining or refraining from malacha, not creative labor, Isser Malacha, but from hard, backbreaking, real work or labor. The Avud Ram says, a different medrash, Shenizdarzu anashim ledivas mishkan vayavo anashim al anashim hukam be'echad benisam v'lo ratz lavi nizmen le'egel notan zchan shem mishmaras rashi chadashim. They protect. The Avud Ram just clarifies. He says, when was it that the men came on the women to try to take their jewelry from them for the egel? It was echad benisam. Since it was a Rosh Chodesh that women resisted and hesitated, that's why women are given the holiday of Rosh Chodesh. The Darkei Moshe, which is the Ramah's commentary on the tour, he quotes from the Or Zarua, another reason, Shebechol Chodesh v'Chodesh Ha'isha Mischadeshes v'Tovelos v'Chozeres L'Baila, V'Yichaviva Alav Kiyom HaChupa, Keshem Sha'alavana Mischadeshes v'Chol Chodesh, V'Akom Mis'avim L'Rosa, Kach Ha'isha Mischadeshes v'Chol Chodesh L'Baila, Women have a internal monthly cycle. They are in tuned with the notion of a monthly cycle, of a lunar cycle. Just like the moon renews itself with possibility and hope and promise, people are excited by the renewal, the hope and the promise of the moon, so too a woman's monthly cycle, which is pregnant with possibility, pun intended, of possibility and a future in which when she, at the end of that cycle, goes to the mikvah and is able to return to her husband, then there's a joyous, happy, harmony reunion. So therefore, women, he has a different tradition, the Or Zarua. The reason women are given the month, the holiday of Rosh Chodesh has nothing to do with the Egel and the Mishkan, but really is because women have this internal calendar and clock. They're much more in tune with the notion of a monthly cycle. How do we paskin? Is this true? You women should know this by now. You've lost out on a lot of opportunity if you don't. Shulchan Aruch Siman Taf Yud Zayin writes, Rosh Chodesh Mutar Basiyas Malacha. Rosh Chodesh Yiladu Malacha. Aye, we said Musaf. There was a Korban Musaf. Normally we associate Musaf with a Yantif that you can't do Malacha. No, it's a quasi Yantif. Yes, there was a Musaf, a half halal. Mutar Basiyas Malacha. I'm at work right now. You're allowed to do Malacha. Vanashim Noago Shilolasas Malacha Hu Minag Tov. The Shulchan Aruch, for Sephardim, this is a big sacrifice for Sephardim men. They say to their wives, it is a Minag Tov. It is a good and a proper practice for women to refrain from malacha. Says the Ramah, v'yaminag asas miktas malachas, v'asas miktas anas lina basara minag. Whatever the local custom is, they do some malacha, not others. It is a day off. Mishnah Berurah writes, avalam nagu anashim ein ze minag klal. If a man comes along and tries to say, honey, I can't change the diaper, I can't drive carpool, I'm not doing bath time, bedtime, I'm not making dinner, it's Rosh Chodesh. The Mishnah Berurah says, you tell that man, get lost. Nice try. I'm only barely paraphrasing. I'm essentially translating. Emanashim ein zemin haklal. Get lost. Nice try. You're not. Not only are you not off the hook, you are the one who's super on the hook. Aruch HaShulchan quotes this halacha. Rav Yechiel Michal Epstein, and he says, "V'inei etzleinu nishei bali batim einos malachos." He says, it's not proper grammar, but he was probably yeshivish. So he said, by us, what's the proper way? You didn't say by us. Our custom is that the wives of the balabatim do not do malacha. The nashim oskas b'um nesosas malacha. So if they go to work, they go to work even on Rosh Chodesh. But the Aruch HaShulchan says, our minag is that on Rosh Chodesh, the man's responsible for dinner. The man's got to fold the laundry. The man's got to make the bed, right? Which means takeout, right? Loosely translates to takeout or barbecue. Barbecue or an omelet or takeout, basically. But this is the proper practice. Shulchan Aruch paskins this way. The Mishnah Berurah paskins this way, that the proper practice is women should not have to cook, clean, do laundry on Rosh Chodesh. I'm off today. So, ladies, tonight's also Rosh Chodesh. So, pick up, go out, make him go to work, or pick up for yourself if you don't have somebody to make for you or with you. But take the day off. Take the day off. Schedule your malacha around Rosh Chodesh to keep it, to preserve it, and to keep it to yourself. The question that's left is why? What was it about women that they knew? Is Rosh Chodesh an arbitrary reward? Like, Hashem was like, okay, these women, they did a good thing. They didn't give to the Egel, they ran to give to Rosh Chodesh. What do I have for them? What am I going to give them? What prize? What do I have left? I don't know. I have something minor. Rosh Chodesh. Take Rosh Chodesh. Is it arbitrary? Avram and Pesach not arbitrary. Yitzchak and Shavuos not arbitrary. Yaakov and Sukkot not arbitrary. So it's hard to believe that Rosh Chodesh as a reward to women. Is there something specifically that's connected though? What is the connection between Rosh Chodesh and women that Rosh Chodesh should be the reward for the fact that they did not participate in the Egel and they ran with alacrity and zeal to participate and contribute to the Mishkan? So it could be the notion again of the cycle and the rebirth and the renewal. But Rosh Schwab says something very beautiful. My Meis HaShoeva, Rosh Schwab has the following idea. I want to elaborate a little bit on it myself. Basically, he says the following. Rosh Chodesh is a very funny holiday. Go outside tonight, it's Rosh Chodesh, first of the month of Adar, and go look up in the sky, and what will you find? You will find the smallest moon possible, a sliver, a barely discernible, negligible moon. Barely a moon. Now, if you would have asked me, we're going to make a holiday for the month, we're going to make a holiday for the moon, when should we make it? I would have said, holiday for the moon should be go outside when the moon is in its full glory. When it's a full, huge moon, its full glory, radiating and reflecting the most brightness from the sun, that's when you should make the holiday for the moon. But we don't. The holiday for the moon, Rosh Chodesh, HaKodesh Lachem, is when the moon is the smallest sliver it can be. Why? What are we meant to do on Rosh Chodesh? Rosh Chodesh, this is what Rav Schwab says, Chidesh HaLevana B'chol Rosh Chodesh Ma'orer Al HaOlam HaAsid LeHischadesh. Rosh Chodesh is a holiday not of the present. Pesach is about the present. Liberty and freedom in the present. Shavuos is about receiving the Torah in the present. Sukkot is about being protected in the elements by Hashem in the present. Rosh Chodesh is a holiday that's all about not the present, but our faith, our confidence, our trust, our vision for the future. When you go outside and you see that little sliver of a moon, you say, David Melech Yisrael Chai V'Kayim. You say, David Melech Yisrael is coming back. The Jewish people are likened to the moon. Right now we might be beaten down. We might only be a little sliver remaining, but we are going to make a comeback. We're going to be the comeback players of the year. When you look outside at that moon, you see the sliver, but you can almost see the outline of the whole moon. And we know, we live and we believe the moon waxes and wanes. It will grow full and large and bright once again. So which is the gender? Who are the species that are able to in the present not live for the present, but have an eye to the future? Who have the bina? Who have the insight, the wisdom, the forethought? Who are able to say, it's not about the here and now. It's not about indulging, it's not about on demand, it's not about panicking, but I have the capacity even right now to see what's going to be, the consequences for my actions, to see what's going to happen. That was women. When the men panicked with the ego, the women said, whoa, relax, let's give it another day. Maybe we miscalculated, maybe he's coming back. This doesn't seem like a good idea. Because women with the Chet HaEgel were able to have an eye to the future, were able to see what was yet coming. That's why they're rewarded with Rosh Chodesh, because Rosh Chodesh is an entire holiday of having an eye to the future. Mishnah says in the second parak of Pirkei Avos, Reb Shimon Omer, what is the derech tova sheidbak ba'adam? What is the proper path a person should cling to? So Reb Shimon Omer, haroa es hanolad. You have to be roa es hanolad. It doesn't say see the future. It says roa es hanolad. What does the word nolad mean? It's a brilliant insight. It doesn't say see the future. What's the proper path to live? Look at the future. It doesn't say see the future. We're not prophets. We don't have crystal balls. We can't predict the future. What it says is roa es hanolad. What does the word nolad mean? See what will be born in the future. Because you know what? What's being born in the future is being conceived today. So understand what you conceive today, what it will bear in the future. Be roa es hanolad. Understand the decisions we make today, the impact that they will have, the outcome that they will have in the future. Be roa es hanolad. Who are the ones who are roa es hanolad? Those are nashim tzidkaniyos. That's what the Torah tells us. Vayiven es hatzela. Kadosh Baruch Hu fashioned Chava out of Adam. The Gemara learns, don't read it, tzela. Gemara nida memhei. A woman has an insight, a foresight. A woman has the ability to see, to predict, to think, to prepare. That's an intuitive, that's part of a makeup, a psyche of a woman more than men. And historically, we've seen this. By the way, the Torah was given to women first. We just read that, Parshas Yisro, for this reason. But Sarah was able to understand about Yishmael. And Rivka understood about Esav. And Ashes Un ben Peles understood and warned him about Korach. And Avigail is able to give David HaMelech what he needs to know. Our Tanakh is filled with women who, when impetuous men are about to react impetuously, say, slow down. Think about this. Be roa es hanolad. Understand how the decision you're making right now, what you're conceiving, what you're the conception you have right now, what it will be, what is going to give birth to in the future. In the future. And that's the women. That's why, where else do you see this right now, connecting to our Parsha? We'll end with this. Where else do you see this connecting to our Parsha? Next week's Parsha? Our Parsha? The Kiyor. What was right next to the Mizbeach and the Mishkan? The Kiyor that the Kohanim prepared, they washed in. What was it made up on the bottom? The mirrors. So Moshe Rabbeinu said to Hashem, these mirrors, mirrors of vanity, mirrors the women use to beautify themselves, you're going to put in your holiest place? It's going to sit closest to your altar? No way! It's a davar mos. It's a repulsive, despicable instrument of vanity. No way! Hashem says to Moshe, buddy, relax, first of all. Second of all, those are not instruments of vanity. They are the most precious thing there is to me. Make them the base of the kiyor. And that's what the Kohanim are going to look at every time they wash and prepare to serve me. Why? Why? What significance did they have? Let's go back in time. Because in the heart of the servitude, when everyone was down and out, when things seemed bleak, the women looked in the mirror and beautified. When the husbands withdrew and said, we can't be together, we can't be intimate, we're not bringing children into this world so they could be turned into bricks, thrown in the river, murdered, go up in flames, we're done. Men withdrew and said, we're not bringing children into this world. And the women said, do you have no faith? Do you have no optimism? Do you have no capacity to see the future? Don't you know what the future will bring? Of course we have to create continuity. Of course we have to bring children into the world. How'd they do it? They looked in the mirror, they beautified themselves, they attracted the attention of their husbands, and they were able to create a continuity. The most beautiful and precious thing to Hashem in that Mishkan, we're not instruments of vanity, but instruments of faith, of belief, of seeing the future. The women, again, were the ones who did it. And they were rewarded with Rosh Chodesh, not as some arbitrary reward or prize, but because the essence of Rosh Chodesh is what women are all about. Now, while women are exempt, or women don't have to do malacha, or shouldn't do malacha on Rosh Chodesh, it doesn't mean men shouldn't tap into this theme and essence. It means every Rosh Chodesh is a time, the Or Gedalia, or Gedalia Shua writes, HaChidosh HaLavan HaMora HaKoach is Chadshus B'Bnei Yisrael. Rosh Chodesh is the Yontov of his Chadshus. That just like that moon waxes and wanes, it changes, so too do we have the capacity for renewal, for newness, for a fresh start. You don't have to wait till next Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur to redefine yourself. You don't have to wait for your next birthday to be born again. But we have the capacity, HaChodesh Zelachem, his Chadshus, newness, a new beginning and a fresh start, to draw a line in that card to say, this month I'm going to realize the best version of myself. I'm going to be who I'm meant to be. I'm going to live the way I want to live. I'm going to achieve the goals. I'm going to be determined to accomplish what I set out to. Hischadshus. Hischadshus is the ability to have a renewal and a fresh start. So with all of this, I think maybe that's Kaparas Pasha. The notion that Kaparas Pasha for that extra month is not just some arbitrary term, phrase, or clause, but the idea of atonement. Men needed atonement. We needed atonement because we miscalculated. We panicked because we lived for the moment, not for the future. And therefore, maybe for that extra month, as women get that extra reward, we invoke Kaparas Pasha for the mistake that we made then, not to make the mistake again. That we continue to remind ourselves, have an eye to the future. Understand what will be born tomorrow is being conceived today. Understand the consequences of the decisions, of the speech, of the actions that we take today. So wishing everyone a good chodesh, a chodesh tov. Should be a month filled with bracha and simcha and parnasa, osher v'chavod, yir ha-shamayim, yir ha-schait. Should be a month where Hashem should answer, kol mishal asli beinu l'tova. Have a fantastic day.